Jordan, so near banks I stand, and cast a wishful eye.
Hi, this is Jay Webb of International Gospel Hour. Since 1934, Churches of Christ have proclaimed God's Word through International Gospel Hour. Please stay tuned for another lesson on this program by Jody Apple. Are you listening?
For the promised land.
Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260. Today's broadcast, lesson number 1 of week number 14, studying Matthew chapter 14, part of a 1 chapter per week, 260-week, 5-year-long study of the New Testament. As we get started, these reminders. You can, of course, listen to our programs as they air live, but when you can't, you can still have unlimited access to all of our materials, always free, by clicking the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. There you will find links to our newsletter, our video series, Christ Obeyed, What About Me?, our audio series, The Big Questions, links to download the book, Victory in Jesus, links to Bible reading schedules, and links to all of these IGH 260 broadcasts, as well as links to our Bible study courses. For a free listing of all of these materials, send an email to free@ighradio.com. To receive IGH 260 text updates, just text the word IGH free to 55222. That's IGHFREE, all one word, text IGH free to 55222. Here are 2 great ways to study God's Word. First, use our completely free, self-paced online Bible study program. You can get started by going to igh.worldbibleschool.org, or you can click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. Second, if you prefer to study by mail, then call this toll-free number, 1-855-IGH-6988, to receive our free 30-lesson Bible study series. You can also request that series by using the contact form at our website, internationalgospelhour.com. We also encourage you to join the more than 7,100 people who keep up with International Gospel Hour by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/International Gospel Hour, or by visiting this Twitter page, twitter.com/Jody Apple. One last thought before we get started today. Time moves forward. It never stops. It's hard to imagine, but we are 3 months into what was once a new year. At the end of this week, we will have completed 14 chapters in our study of Matthew's Gospel. Though we are a long way from completing a study of all 260 chapters of the New Testament, we will be a little more than 5% of the way there when we conclude with our thoughts about Matthew 14:36. Thank you so much for joining our study so far. We hope and pray that we will be able to complete the remaining 95% of our 1 chapter per week study of the New Testament. Let's get into our study of Matthew chapter 14. As we get ready to study Matthew 14, let's take a look at how the preceding chapter, Matthew 13, the Kingdom of Heaven parables chapter, how that chapter ended. It ended with these words. Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished these parables, that he departed from there. When he had come to his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, so that they were astonished and said, "Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things?" So they were offended at him. But Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor, except in his own country and in his own house." Now he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. That's the closing chapters of Matthew 13, starting in verse 53 and going through verse 58. Jesus' ministry of preaching, teaching and healing was, more often than not, depicted in Matthew's narrative as being quite successful, or, if the word successful does not quite fit, at least very well known. As Jesus' ministry gets into full swing, starting in Matthew 4:23, multitudes began to follow him, and his fame spread far and wide. The multitudes continued to follow Jesus, listen to Jesus, watch Jesus, and they learned more and more about who Jesus was and what Jesus wanted them to know about becoming his kingdom disciples. Along the way, Jesus attracted the attention of the religious leaders, as did John the Baptizer before him, and Jesus became the object of their criticism. The closing verses of Matthew 13, however, show us that Jesus was not always regarded as wildly popular. There's a reason for that. As Jesus had done from the beginning of his public preaching, he continued to preach and teach in the synagogues of Galilee. That's reflected in that opening setting of Matthew 4:23 and following, and then again in Matthew 9, verse 35, and Matthew 12, verse 9. In the closing verses of Matthew 13, Jesus had come into his own country, and he taught them in their synagogue, Matthew 13, verse 54. We are not told what Jesus taught, but the text does tell us the response that Jesus' teaching generated. First, we are told that they were astonished. Other translations render the term as amazed or in amazement, surprised or greatly surprised. Bauer defines the term as to cause to be filled with amazement, to the point of being overwhelmed, hence amaze, astound, overwhelm. He has this side note that literally it meant to strike out of one's senses, when in the active form it meant be amazed, overwhelmed. The term appears 13 times throughout the New Testament, 12 of those appearances in the Gospels, and all 12 of them referring to the impact that Jesus had in one way or another. We have already seen it once in our studies of Matthew's Gospel. It appears in the closing verses of the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 7:28 through 29, where we read, "And so it was, when Jesus had ended these sayings, that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes." The only time that the term appears outside of the Gospels was in Acts chapter 13, verse 12. There Paul was teaching Sergius Paulus, and even though it was Paul doing the teaching on this occasion, the text tells us that then the proconsul believed when he saw what had been done, being astonished at the teaching of the Lord. It was not Jesus preaching or teaching on that occasion, but it was the teaching about Jesus that astonished this new believer. Thus, all 13 occurrences refer to something that astonished either in the life of Jesus himself or about the Lord even after he died. Again, though we do not know what Jesus taught in the synagogue on this occasion, we do know that it definitely caught the attention of his audience that day. In most contexts where the term translated as astonished or amazed appears, the response was positive. The audience was appreciative of what they heard and/or they praised God as a result of the message. Not so here. Immediately after we learn that they were astonished, we see these questions. Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things? Matthew chapter 13, verses 54 through 56. The first questions, asking where Jesus got his wisdom and the ability to perform his mighty works, might, in other settings, have drawn those who heard that wisdom or witness those mighty works to wonder whether or not Jesus was the Son of David, the Messiah, the coming one, the prophet, or whether or not God was with him. But in this setting, the questions did not lean at all in that direction. Rather than pointing above, to the divine, to the heavenly origin of the teaching and the miracles of Jesus, they leaned in the other direction. All they could think about, apparently, were the earthly, physical, fleshly, family connections that they knew about Jesus. They knew who Jesus' father was, Is this not the carpenter's son? They knew who Jesus' mother was. Is not his mother called Mary? They knew the names of the brothers of Jesus, and his brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. And they knew of Jesus' sisters, and his sisters. Are they not all with us? Though we could be quite critical of their questions and the attitudes that they reflect, we must remember who they were, where they were, what they saw and or perceived, and why they did so. Jesus grew up in their midst. They saw and they knew both Jesus and his family frequently. These all too familiar connections with Joseph, with Mary, with Jesus' brothers and Jesus' sisters did not readily lend themselves to concluding that Jesus must be a prophet of God. Not at all. They more easily lent themselves to drawing this conclusion. He's one of us. He's just like we are. He cannot be a prophet of God. Robertson, following this line of thought, said it was unpardonable for Jesus not to be commonplace like themselves. Their final opinion, found in Matthew 13, verse 57, so they were offended at him. That term appears in other translations as they took offense. They were bitter against him, so they rejected him. They were stumbled at him, reflecting the literal sense of the original term. They were deeply offended. They turned angrily away from him. They are repulsed by him and fell into sin. And finally, they turned against him. The term, with our word scandal at its root, means to cause to be brought to a downfall, cause to sin. That's the sense we find in Matthew 5, verse 29. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. But the term also means to be led into sin, to be repelled by someone of Jesus, by refusing to believe in him or by becoming apostate from him, a person falls into sin. Rogers and Rogers note that in this context, to be offended was the opposite of to believe in him. That's consistent with what we read in the last verse in Matthew 13. Now he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. Chapter 13, verse 58. Why? Because, though Jesus was a prophet, prophets are typically honored away from their own country, but not in their own country. That brings us to the start of Matthew chapter 14, our present study. Before we get into a more detailed investigation of the chapter, let's survey what we will see in its 36 verses. We start with a quick overview of the key terms that appear in the chapter. In the original text, there are 561 total words appearing in 202 distinct forms in the 36 verses of Matthew 14. The usual common helping terms appear most frequently in the text, terms that are translated as the, who, which, and so forth. As we have often seen in Matthew, especially so in the narratives that record Jesus preaching and teaching, we see the words translated for say, speak, and tell appearing frequently, 13 times in this chapter. Terms for crowd or people appear 8 times in the chapter. That indicates that Jesus continued to be followed by and that he continued to engage with the multitudes. Jesus was personally, by name, referenced 6 times in the chapter, as was the term for disciple or student and the word for boat or ship. As we read through Matthew 14, we will learn why those terms appear as frequently as they do. Other significant people occur in Matthew chapter 14. John, referring to John the Baptizer, was mentioned 5 times in the chapter. References to John are quite sad to read, as they all center on his death, specifically why he died. And then finally, Herod was mentioned by name 4 times in Matthew 14. And Herodias, who was complicit in John's death, was mentioned 2. Matthew chapter 14 will be marked by the lowest of lows, the death of John the Immerser. As if his death were not sad enough, the circumstances that surrounded it were, in a word, sinful. The lowest of lows, if possible, sank even lower, when, to retaliate against John's righteous preaching and his righteous judgment against Herod and his new wife Herodias, Herod ordered John to be beheaded. Yet, in the midst of such egregious sinful behavior, Jesus continued his ministry. Sin, of course, never stopped while Jesus was doing the work that he came to do. But it's hard not to wonder about Jesus' thoughts in light of this specific sin. Jesus' life and his teachings in Matthew 14 are as you would expect them to be. They are typified by Jesus' prayer, by Jesus' compassion for the multitudes, by Jesus' miraculous feeding of those multitudes, by Jesus' miraculous walking on the water, and by Jesus' continual preaching, teaching, and healing. And along the way, we observe an incredible statement of faith by the disciples of Jesus. In spite of the horrors around him, Jesus never stopped what Jesus came to do. He came to seek and to save the lost, and Jesus did so by preaching, teaching, and healing. From start to finish, that defined Jesus' work. From start to finish, that defined Jesus. Let's turn to surveying the text of Matthew chapter 14 itself. In Matthew 14, verses 1 through 5, the opening verses of Matthew 14 set the stage for the events to follow. A timestamp appears, at that time. That tells us that what we are about to read took place in the same general time frame as what we just read in the closing verses of Matthew 13. Herod, a tetrarch, heard about the work of Jesus. He told his servants that this, referring to the report that he heard, must be about John, referring to John the Baptizer. That definitely caught Herod's attention because, as Herod knew quite well, John was dead. Herod assumed that John had risen from the dead and was now doing the mighty works that were actually being done by Jesus. Herod's surprise was understandable, for Herod was the one who had John imprisoned, and Herod was the one who was ultimately responsible for John's death. The circumstances are spelled out in some detail in this context. Herod imprisoned John because John told him, Herod, that he, Herod, had no right to have Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. Herod would have had John killed, but he realized that the people thought John was a prophet, and for fear of what might happen should he have John put to death, it prevented him, at least initially, from acting on that impulse. In Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 6 and going through verse 12, we note this. At some point in time, Herod's birthday was celebrated. As part of the celebration, Herodias' daughter danced before the assembled crowd, and Herod was pleased. Herod made a promise to give her whatever she wanted. Her mother Herodias, the wife of Philip that Herod had taken, encouraged her to ask for John the Baptizer's head. Herod, though he first thought to kill John, was sorry. But because he had made the promise publicly at this birthday celebration, he did not retract the oath, the commitment that he made. Herod issued the decree that John be killed. John was beheaded in prison, and his head was brought to Herodias' daughter, who then brought it to her mother. John's disciples came, took John's body, buried it, and then told Jesus what had happened. In Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 15, we read this. When Jesus heard what happened to John, Jesus went off by himself to a deserted place. The multitudes, who had been consistently following Jesus since the beginning of his ministry, found out where Jesus was, and they joined him. Jesus, seeing the multitude, did what he had often done before. He felt compassion for them, and Jesus healed those who were sick. We do not know what time of day it was when Jesus heard about John's death, nor do we know how long it was before Jesus retreated into a desert place and how long he remained there. Nor do we know how long Jesus spent healing those who were sick among the multitudes. But when evening came, the disciples encouraged Jesus to send the multitudes away so that they could go into the villages and buy food for themselves. In Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 16 and going through verse 21, we learn that Jesus had other ideas. Rather than sending the multitudes away, Jesus told the disciples to give them something to eat. The disciples told the Lord, "We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. Obviously not enough to feed a great multitude. The stage was set. Jesus said, "Bring them," that is, the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, "bring them here to me." Jesus instructed the multitudes to sit on the grass, and then Jesus took the loaves and the fish, looked toward heaven, blessed, and then broke the loaves. He gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples in turn distributed them to the multitudes. Everyone ate, and everyone was filled. In the end, the disciples, and perhaps others as well, gathered 12 full baskets of the food that remained. The number of people in the multitude was estimated to be about 5,000, but that accounted only for the men present and not the women and the children. In Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 22 and going through verse 33, we note that Jesus directed his disciples to travel by boat to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, while Jesus stayed and sent the multitudes away. Afterward, Jesus went up on the mountain alone to pray. When the evening arrived, Jesus was still alone on the mountain. The boat, carrying the disciples, was now in the middle of the lake, tossed by the waves and buffeted by the wind. Later in the night, Jesus walked toward the disciples who were still in the boat. He walked on the water toward them. When the disciples saw Jesus walking toward them on the sea, they were afraid, thinking that they had seen a ghost, and in fear, they cried out. Jesus, obviously hearing their cries, said to them, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." Peter, always the impetuous apostle, asked if the Lord would allow him, Peter, to come to him, that's Jesus, by walking on the water. Jesus directed Peter to come to him. Initially, when Peter came out of the boat, he successfully walked on the water toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, Peter became afraid, and he cried out for Jesus to save him. Jesus stretched out his hand, caught Peter, and asked him why he doubted. When Peter and Jesus returned to the boat, the wind stopped. The disciples, having witnessed this incident, worshiped Jesus, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Matthew chapter 14, verses 34 through 36. Matthew 14 ends with this account. After the disciples and Jesus crossed over the Sea of Galilee, they landed at Gennesaret. When the residents of that area realized who Jesus was, they gathered people from the surrounding region, and they brought all who were sick to Jesus. They begged Jesus just to be able to touch the hem of his garment, and those who did so were healed. Let's start to look at Matthew chapter 14 in more detail. As we have seen many times before, chapter breaks often take place at the point of a change in place or a change in time. This chapter begins with a chronological reference, the words, "at that time." It does not refer to any specific day or any specific date, but it serves rather to function as a segue into the account that we are about to read. Matthew chapter 3, verse 2 tells us that John began his ministry preaching, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." After Jesus was baptized by John, after he was tempted in the wilderness by the devil, he too began his ministry with the same message, Matthew 4, verse 17. In that immediate context, between the time that his temptation ended and the time that Jesus began to preach, Jesus heard that John had been put into prison, Matthew 4, verse 12. Jesus was, in order to be baptized by John, in Judea, near the Jordan River, where John was baptizing. But upon learning that John was imprisoned, Jesus went to Galilee, left Nazareth, where he was raised, and began to live in Capernaum by the Sea of Galilee. In the context in which John's imprisonment was first mentioned, Matthew chapter 4, verse 12, we are not told why John was put in prison. Later, in the opening verses of Matthew chapter 11, John was still in prison. At that time, 2 of John's disciples came to Jesus, asking whether or not he, Jesus, was the coming one. In this account, Matthew 11, we are still not told why John was in prison, only that he remained there. It's not until we get to this chapter, Matthew chapter 14, that we learn all of the details. The chapter begins by telling us that Herod heard about the works of Jesus, verse 1. But rather than attribute them to Jesus, Herod believed them to be the works of John the Baptizer, verse 2. For that to be true, however, John had to be risen from the dead. Again, verse 2. It's here in this context that we learn for the first time that John died. Prior references to this point, after chapter 4, verse 12, were either to John's imprisonment or to John's disciples coming to ask questions. Herod knew that John was dead, because Herod was the one who had John killed. Yet, Herod appeared to believe that not only had John risen from the dead, but the works that he heard about were powers at work in him, meaning John. Again, chapter 14, verse 2. As the text continues, we learn what led to John's death. Herod had taken his brother's wife. His brother was Philip. Philip's wife was Herodias. Chapter 14, verse 3. At some point, John told Herod, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Chapter 14, verse 4. And, though Herod's first impulse was to have John put to death, because Herod was afraid of the multitudes who believed that John was a prophet of God, he imprisoned John instead. Chapter 14, verse 5. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 14. These reminders as we close, consider enrolling in our completely free, self-paced online Bible study. To get started, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. If you prefer to study by mail, call this toll-free number 1-855-IGH-6988 to receive our free 30-lesson Bible study series.
God be with you till we meet again.
Thank you for listening to our broadcast today. We hope, first, that it glorified God, but second, we hope that it edified you. Listen to it again if you need to, or to other lessons in the series by going to the Media tab at our site at internationalgospelhour.com.